You're listening to a Cripple and Co. production.
Bit of a shameless plug before we continue with the podcast. Reconnecting Rainbows Press are publishing my first novel, Twisted Roots. So if you like spores, if you're into revenge and love a bit of redemption, as well as some queer witches and a non-binary entity, and you like free tarot reading and cupcakes, come and join us at the Common Press in London on the 21st of April. It would be amazing to see some of your wonderful faces there. And you can pick up a signed copy. I'll also be at the V&A on the 30th for a very special show as part of their performance festival. Trans Tales, Musically Moving Museums, will feature performances from myself, Syro, and the wonderful Carrot. Tickets are free, so make sure you grab yourself one. Welcome to A.G. Parker's Cabinet of Curiosities, an inclusive podcast focused on queer, disabled, and marginalised creatives and their art. If you can afford to help me keep the podcast going and help me get the transcription service in place, please sign up to my Patreon for as little as £1 a month on patreon.com/agparker. You can also buy me a coffee on Buy Me a Coffee, which you can find on my link tree. And now, on with the show. So today on the podcast, we have got Chris J. Angel, who is a vocal, brown, trans, non-binary writer, sex worker and activist promoting radical self-love, acceptance and body positivity while fighting to platform marginalised voices in an ever marginalising world. Having spoken at countless trans rights protests, podcasts and now recently published in 28, an anthology of queer voices by Kestrel Guyon, they work to inspire, ignite and destigmatize what was forced into the shadows for far too long. Hey, babes, how are you doing?
Hey, my love, I'm amazing. How are you? Thank you so much for that amazing introduction.
I mean, like, it's who you are. So you're calling yourself amazing, which you should be, because, wow.
We have to, right? Like, especially right now in this world when everything is just going to hellfire, we need to find that self-love and acceptance in us. We need to like celebrate ourselves as much as we can.
Exactly. So in theory, I think I completely agree with you. The demons in my head, the little head gremlins who like hate on me so much are like, no, but you're totally right. There's enough people that are going to hate on our, you know, who we are because of our identities, because of what we do. So we might as well love ourselves.
Exactly. And not to get into it too fast, exactly what you just said, it's the head gremlins. It's not yourself. It's the head gremlins. It's not you with those voices. So just remember that you're overpowering those head gremlins by recognizing that they're there.
I love that. I love that. Yeah. Having that, you know, keeping that in mind that they're separate entities that I am not. Yeah, wonderful. So before we do get into it, I'm going to start by saying the last time we saw each other was at the launch of 28, the anthology of queer voices who grew up with Section 28, put together by the wonderful Kestrel Guyon. As someone who is so passionate about building queer community and platforming marginalised voices, what was it like for you to be part of that project?
Absolutely incredible. I'll be honest, I kind of put it on the back burner for a while, because when Kestrel asked me, I kind of thought to myself, I don't know what I have to say about it, because we all had these individual experiences, but how do you break it down? How do you make it this story that people can understand and resonate with? And I left it as long as I could. And then I just started writing, and then I just continued to write. And then I started to pull from some of my protest speeches and just formulate this small kind of framework of what we'd experienced. But doing it was incredible, and I've loved getting to read other people's stories and experiences and poetry and art and just building our own little community and going to get to read it to people and sign books. We're signing books with our names in it. What the hell?
Yeah, it's very cool. That sense of community, though, for me. So I was the same as you when Kestrel kind of said, like, I've got this idea for this book and I want to do this and I want to hear from these people. I kind of thought, how do you, yeah, like you said, how do you break that down? How do you kind of separate it out? And I think it was only after the fact, and you know, when we were at the book launch, that I was like, oh my God, and more stuff was kind of coming up, because I think you actually block quite a lot of it out for a very long time.
Yeah, same. Hearing other people's stories, like obviously at the book launch, when we hear the contributors' experiences and we've read the book, you see things and you go, that actually aligns with my story as well. And I experienced that and I heard these words and I dealt with the same thing as well. And it just didn't resonate until that point.
Yeah, exactly. That, or you know, you'd feel ashamed for. So, for instance, I remember kind of having girls treat me a certain way because I came out as bisexual. I'm pansexual, but I didn't know that pansexual was a thing back then.
Same.
And girls in my year and in my friendship group even would treat me in a certain way after that. And then I remember one of the other contributors to the anthology getting up and talking about that. And I was like, oh my God, I thought that was just me. And of course, it's not just me. But that, you know, maybe again, head gremlins kind of tell you it is just you. You're the big freaky weirdo.
Yeah, and you know, these head gremlins, I love that we've just coined this phrase, head gremlins.
There you go. I mean, why not?
Gremlins are all just the societal voices that we hear, but they just infiltrate our system and they just absorb into us, and we start thinking that that voice is us, and it's
Yeah.
not. It's trying to make us think it's us. And I, as somebody that's gone through an eating disorder and body dysmorphia, like I've had to realize a few years ago that that voice, that disordered voice, isn't me. It's just the illness.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, there's so much wisdom in what you say, which is, I think that's amazing that you've come to a point where you recognize that.
I try.
Tell me a little bit more about your passion for self-love, acceptance, and positivity.
So I have always struggled my whole life. To be honest, I grew up in a household where they just I never knew a lot of love growing up because my family were so obsessed with fitting into this country and just kind of assimilating in this world that it was all about, well, we're English, we're English, we're English, but we have brown skin. That there was so much self-hatred in that I had a lot of self-hatred. And then going into school and facing abuse for being a very clearly brown, very clearly, a clearly queer person, it was like abuse versus abuse. And so I never had a lot of self-love. And throughout life, I just kind of spiraled and spiraled and spiraled into this cesspit of hatred. And it wasn't until hitting like a really big breaking point. Where I wanted to unalive myself. Then spending a few years in the wilderness saying, no, I actually want to live now. But realizing what it was and what that meant. And taking years and years, even just from recognizing that I was a trans non-binary person, to actually coming out as a trans non-binary person. And the second that I did that, I realized I'd reached my potential. And that I had an ability in myself and a drive and passion in myself that I never knew I had before. And whatever I can do to show people that they have that ability in themselves as well, they just need to listen to themselves and not listen to society and give themselves the love and recognition and cherish that we give to everybody else, then I will do whatever I can to do that.
That is so beautiful. Oh, obviously it's a heartbreaking story, but I think so many people can relate to that and have probably gone through a similar thing of, you know, having abuse at home, abuse wherever, and just having to find themselves and really dig down. And it's something that I love our queer community for, is that we have kind of made ourselves in so many different ways, but it's wonderful that you're there kind of cheering other people on and trying to pull other people up. Now you're kind of out of those really murky waters.
But don't you think that that's what just what our queer community kind of do in general anyway, is just trying to celebrate and uplift everybody, especially as marginalized people. We're just trying to raise those voices that hadn't been heard before or given
Yeah.
a platform to be heard, you know? And that includes all of us. We all have that ability. in us. And I feel like we always celebrate everyone and see people thrive, and we're happy to see other people in our community thrive, but we need to do that for ourselves as well. It's so underrated, especially like for me as a people pleaser. I would put everybody first and please everyone, please everyone, please everyone until my energy depleted. And then I realized that the only person I wasn't pleasing was myself, and I had nothing to give anybody.
And that's something that happens to people quite a lot, isn't it? You are so full of wisdom. I'm sat here with a cup of tea. It's the morning, it's snowing outside, and I'm just like, all this queer joy and wisdom is just so
Yeah, so
delicious.
it's just a celebration, and I love the fact that I feel like I vibe with you really well. Like, it's just a joy talking to you.
Yay.
Yeah.
I know as well, like when I was listening to you speak, not just kind of reading the excerpt of yours from the book at the book launch, but also listening to you kind of talk about stuff afterwards. And I just thought, wow, like it's so great to have somebody represent, the trans community, the non-binary community, I'm sure for the BIPOC community as well. Like it's really important to see people like you. What are your thoughts on representation?
I think representation is incredibly lacking. I mean, in the mainstream, like literally, unless I think especially for trans people, unless you fit a certain criteria, unless you look a specific way or fit into the rigid binary, it's very hard to make a name for yourself or kind of steer a path for yourself that then people can look up to and idolize. And obviously, with doing that, that's when you do get media attention and stuff. And I don't want media attention. That's not my thing at all. But I do think it's necessary that we need some form of visibility, whatever it is, in whatever small way possible. Like, just from obviously, we've been doing this 28 book tour. I've been kind of trying to go around and do as many places as I can. And just hearing the response from people in the audience, I've had so many brown people come up to me and say, it's amazing to see somebody like myself that represents myself up on that stage reading a story that maybe I wasn't born at this time and I didn't experience it, but there was something in there that aligned with my own experience. And I think, especially when we come from cultures that maybe aren't necessarily understood in the UK mainstream, which is so incredibly whitewashed, you get one or two black families in an advert, and suddenly everything's too woke, and the world and the media can't handle it, and everything's melting down. It's like when I grew up, there was nobody like myself on television, not one person. If there was ever a black, a brown, indigenous character in anything, it was a stereotype written by a white man. It was never anything truthful. It was always the butt of a joke. It was always racism stemmed through and through. And the fact that we now are finding the ability and platforms to actually tell our stories is so necessary, but there's still a long way to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And you talk a bit about how it's wonderful to have allies.
Oh,
Wonderful to have allies.
yeah. No, and listen, allies are really necessary. I really appreciate allies. I think allies are integral to our journey and our fight. But I've dealt with a lot of self-professed allies in this world who are basically just in it to just put their own face at the forefront of a community that they're not actually directly a part of. And it's struggle. It's like, why, I would love to know why so many cis white men are forcing themselves to the front of trans rights protests or speaking on panels about trans activism. I genuinely do not understand it. And it's an inherent problem in, I hate to say it, but in the cis gay community, that a lot of cis gay men only really listen to things about trans activism when it's coming from another cis gay man, and then especially if it's another cis gay man that they have some form of sexual attraction to, it's suddenly the biggest topic that they need to worry about and they need to address. But they don't know one trans person, they don't know one non-binary trans person, they don't know one person of color, they don't know one person that doesn't look like them, they don't know one person that's disabled, they don't know anybody that has a different lived experience than they do.
And I don't think it's just the cis gay community that's guilty of that. I think, for instance, my mum won't listen to me when I talk about politics because of who I am. But because my husband is white and male and a barrister, she's like, "Oh, Phil, tell me who are you going to vote for?" And she'll agree with pretty much everything he says, even though it's exactly the same as what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, it's not just cis gay men, but I think in the community, obviously, like, they are the most prevalent voices. They are the ones that I've had to deal with a lot.
And
But
again, as you say, it's wonderful that there's this allyship. And if you have
yeah.
got a platform, by all means use it to help the cause. But do that by platforming marginalized voices and not just taking the mic yourself.
Yeah, it's like, please don't speak for us, is my feeling. Please do not speak for us. Like, especially, how can you have a white person talk about a racial experience and then a ra trans racial, like a racial experience of a trans person? Like, does it just doesn't make sense to me in my mind. Like, platform our voices and support us. Like, we need allies. Allies are essential. But there's a big difference between a performative ally and an ally.
Yeah, 100%. Thank you so much for putting that point so clearly as well.
Yeah, I don't want to come on this and be like, I hate allies. Go fuck yourself. No, I don't have allies. Allies are so necessary, and the majority of people in my life are allies. But there's a difference between being an ally because it looks good for you and it gets you some form of clout, and being an ally because you genuinely believe it and you're a good person.
Yeah, I also think there's allies that have really got like the best of intentions, but maybe don't know enough. Because unless you're in the community, if you've just scratched the surface as an ally in terms of understanding, you're like, "Oh my God, I understand everything now," but you really don't, and you probably
Yeah.
won't get to see that you don't. So yeah,
We
we
don't
love allies.
even understand everything, you know. We're asking questions every day. So things change all the time. Language changes all the time and beliefs change all the time. Like, we're still kind of learning this crazy thing that's still spinning around. That's
Exactly. And the best person that's going to be able to explain, whatever it is the person that is experiencing it. Like I get all sorts of questions. I'm like the wise elder who knows everything about queer people
Yeah.
to my straight friends. And I'm like, that's not what I am. I'm just who I am, and I can try and give you some insight into what you're trying to explore, but like really you need to go and do the research or have a conversation.
Hey, we're not a resource, you know, we're not a textbook. We aren't there to like be a guidebook to people on experiences. We're just here existing, and we'll help people wherever much we can, but we can only do so much.
Oh, yes, you put that so well. Thank you. So, aside from the fact that representation is hugely important and you're there to be a voice and an amazing representation for the trans, non-binary and BIPOC community, you also talk about how you've had a lot of negativity, including from the trans community, for being non-binary, but then also being a non-binary person that identifies as she.
Yeah, I'll be honest, the she thing has only been really recent. Friends have always known since I came out as trans non-binary that, like, you can call me they and she, those are my pronouns, but I only started to really make it public recently, and it was like, you know, there's just a certain echelon of the trans med community that, and this is not being hateful towards anyone, but they just live in a very kind of gendered world when it comes to their trans beliefs. And they don't, a lot of people don't necessarily believe that non-binary is a thing, even in the community. And it's like, I don't know, I just get a lot of blowback from people. I've had to turn my DMs on and off a lot, because if it's not some form of abuse, it's usually like, oh, you're not a non-binary person, you're not a real trans person. And it's like, it's my existence, so I literally am. Anybody that knows me and meets me knows the person I am.
Yeah, and I think that's something quite a lot of non-binary people get. It's people that are still they're still kind of like locked into that the gender binary system, ironically. It's, yeah.
And it's also society, you know, non-binary people have always been there, always
Yes.
been in
Oh.
different cultures around the world, in different names, in different beliefs. It's just through colonization that so much of that was erased. And all we're doing now is taking that back and saying, no, actually, we have always been here. We're not some brand new word, dictionary word. We're something that's always existed. And maybe the language has changed over the years, but now we're non-binary people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the argument that it's a new fad, that it's a craze that's just come in
You
is
know what? You know what's
nonsense.
crazy is when people say that we do it for attention. The last thing I want is attention. I want people to ignore me. I literally, like, when people are like, oh, it's just a performance, it's like, honey, I'm sitting here right now. Nobody can see me. I'm on a podcast. I'm sitting here in a fluffy sleeved top, like with the most gorgeous, gorgeous, like ruffles. Like, this is just my life. This is my world. And clothes don't make me non-binary. But this is my daily world existence. It's not a thing of, oh, I'm going out now, so I'm going to throw on the most absurd thing because I want people to look at me and stare at me. I don't want people to see me.
Yeah, it's what you're comfortable in, isn't it? And gender isn't gender expression, and it isn't sex. If it
Is.
was like clothing, though, I am currently wearing a man's shirt and a man's pair of pajamas. Like, I look very mask right now.
Love that for you, King.
Thank you, thank you. But yeah, this is a really, I find it a really interesting thing to consider. So, and I'm only, you know, I only want to have this conversation with you if you're comfortable, but I'm always very interested to know, I want to get the wording right as well, which is very difficult with my brain right now. But like, in terms of, so for myself, when it comes to identifying as non-binary, it's because it's almost like I definitely don't feel like a woman. It makes me feel sick to think about that. I don't feel like a man, and it's almost like there's too much pressure trying to fit into either of those boxes, and I want to just abstain. Like, I'm a gender mutineer. I just want to abstain from gender. Like, fuck that shit. I just want to be who I am and just vibe, really. But I know other people have got different reasons for identifying with being non-binary. And sometimes no reasons at all, because fuck it, like we just are who we are.
Yes. See, for me, I'm just not the gender that I was assigned at birth. Like, that doesn't relate to me. I don't feel that. I know I'm not that in any way. I've always felt a more feminine force inside me, a woman inside me. And at the same time, I also feel like I don't identify with either, but I align more towards a woman. And so for me, that's just how where it falls on the spectrum. That's why I say, like, I'm non-trans non-binary, because I'm definitely not the other thing, but I'm somewhere in between the other two, you know?
Yeah, I completely relate to that. Yeah, I'm working on a set at the moment for this like really cool show that's being put together, and it's all about kind of, again, it's like almost the 28 thing where considering like gender and the journey through gender. And I realized that I went through this period of not really knowing about gender when I was a kid. And then you get to this point where it's suddenly thrust onto you and you're like, what the fuck is this? No, thank you. And then the more you start to understand it, for me, I looked around and I was like, okay, well, there's male and female, and male seems to get respect and get to do the fun things and get to wear the fun clothes and play football and all this cool shit. And female is just not, you know, the power isn't there, the fun isn't there, they're like the butt of jokes all the time. So I was like, well, I'm definitely more aligned with the male side of things. And then it took me such a long time to get over the misogyny, get through societal conditioning, get through, like what societal gender norms are. And then when I eventually did, I was like, oh, I'm non-binary. But I think it takes a really long time, and it's so wonderful
It
that more
does.
conversations are happening.
It does. I mean, I think I was 32 when I realized, like, it took a big chunk of my life, but it's because I had dealt with so much through my life that I couldn't even really see who I was meant to be. I was trying too hard to just fulfill this role I was expected to fulfill. You know, it's because we are conditioned that we have to do these things, and until you really understand and meet other people and know the words and the language and know what these things mean, society doesn't want us to know these things. So that's why also visibility and representation is so necessary.
100%. And well done for being, that representation. I know it catches you a lot of flack as well, but it's totally worth it. I'm sure there's
It does, but you know, as hard as it is, as much as I struggle with it, as much as I don't want to wake up and have to see that my account on Twitter has been sent to these big transphobic accounts and I'm getting messages and people sharing my images and sharing my nude images and trying to remove my sources of income and my fundraisers and all of this crap, they can't take us away. Like, we're not going anywhere, and I'm still going to be here regardless of whether they like it or not. Why are they channeling so much time and energy into people that they claim they don't care about?
Yeah, see, I've wondered about that, and I think we make them fearful, and I think it's really nice to have this very definite view of exactly everything in the world, and then we kind of co come around and disrupt it, but.
Because our existence strips everything that they've been told and conditioned to believe away from the world.
Yeah.
You
It's
know,
as
it's
you
like
say,
the question.
it's only recent. Like this is, a lot of the stuff that we are dealing with now that are like the social constructs are from Victorians onwards. It's nothing. It's a little blip in history.
Even just if you look through the history of clothing, of what clothing was for men versus women. I mean, I hate using those labels for clothing, but you know what I mean. The history of that clothing, of what men would wear and what women would wear, it's just absurd how people believe that, oh, you should wear this and you should wear that. It's like, where does that come from? Why are you forcing this upon people? Why should a girl have to like pink and a boy have to like blue? Like, go fuck yourself.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. There you go. Go fuck yourself.
Just put it in like more intelligent terms, just go fuck yourself.
No, you've been so eloquent, and I think you're allowed to go fuck yourself. Like, especially with like I think the news this I feel I think I say this every time I record the podcast, but man, the news is really
Oh,
Yeah, the news this week is just go fuck yourself to every single Tory at the moment.
yeah, seriously, I'm really struggling to look at any form of social media that doesn't involve dog pics and like,
Send you some
you
dog
know,
pics later.
yeah, your dog is beautiful, you know, so please
Thank
do. But
you.
I can't deal with anything at the minute. Like, I'm just going on to just update people to be like, oh, busy working on my project right now, or busy, here's some random pics of me, here's my butt. Like, whatever I can do to just detract from the cesspit that we're living through right now.
I like the UK has become like it's farcical how bad it is, and every day my partner keeps kind of he's always checking the news, and he tells me about it, and I'm the same as you. Social media for me has to be limited to like cute, funny stuff. Because my Twitter feed is also just dross of like people being like, oh my God, have you seen this really transphobic thing? Or like non-binary people don't exist, or like, refugees. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't handle it right now. And I think we need to protect ourselves and have that self-love and compassion so that we can continue to fight.
We do. Let me tell you, airplane mode on your phone is very, very convenient for these moments. I haven't said anything publicly, really, but I'm working on a book at the minute, and so I've been putting everything on airplane mode and just kind of trying to focus and get myself away from it, because we see this stuff constantly on the daily. Like, every time I go outside, I have some idiot say something to me about how I look, what I'm wearing, whatever. And
Unless
it's.
it's saying how fabulous you look, they can get fucked.
Listen, yeah, right. So this is interesting. You said that. If it's those comments, it's great. I was on the street corner in Eltham, in the street corner, but in Eltham the other day, and wearing this big blue fur coat. If for anybody that doesn't know, Eltham is a very EDL area.
So I'm just going to quickly bust in with the only thing I know about Eltham is that my dad grew up there in the, I want to say like the 30s, and
It's not good.
a bomb dropped through a manhole cover outside where he was living, and you get we like found it on, you can see where World War II bombs dropped. Anyway, that's my knowledge of Eltham, but
Well,
you're the street corner.
right. So let me tell you, it's my experience of Eltham. It's not a good area as a brown person. It's not a good area as a queer person. It's not a good area as a trans person.
Oh
But it
no.
ain't gonna fucking stop me from walking down the street. So I was on that street corner in a big fuck off fur blue fur coat and
Oh.
leggings and big old heels. And somebody got off the bus, and I was like, "Oh no, what is this person going to say to me?" And they just came up to me and said, "I've just got to say, you look amazing. You're a vibe." And I was like, "Yeah,
Oh.
fucking vibe. Thank you." It made a big difference from when I was at a bus stop the other week, and somebody came up to me to my face and went, "What the fuck are you?" And then just walked away.
Wow.
But experiences like that, listen, we I can't speak for you, but I've dealt with that a lot, a lot, a lot, a lot in any part of anywhere I go. On this tour, it's been interesting going around places because there's been interactions and comments and things everywhere. We see when people pull out our phones and take photos of us, and we see all of this stuff, and it does make me feel incredibly fucking uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But
Oh.
yeah, I've been struggling with safety a lot. Sorry to not to rant, but I've been struggling with safety a lot because I've had a few incidents where I've been attacked a few times, and the latest one was just in December, and then I wasn't leaving the flat for a long time. And then it's just been a case of it just continually, rapidly, people saying stuff and doing stuff and yelling stuff and commenting stuff, and I'm always on my own. I'm always on my own. So for a while, I just wasn't leaving the flat, and then I realized this is the time for me to start the book. And it went from me hiding inside at home to me being, you know what, I'm not hiding at home, I'm at home working on this book that means the world to me.
Yes, that's I mean, it's horrendous that you're getting those kind of encounters with people and you're being attacked, and I'm so sorry that you're going through that, but amazing that you've somehow channeled that into an opportunity to be creative. Because so often when we're in fear, you know, we lock down, we don't have that creative drive.
Yeah, it's true.
So yeah, you're so powerful. Well done.
I'll be honest, it was all spearheaded from that lack of safety, of not feeling safe. And I had been talking to somebody, trying to explain to them like why I wasn't leaving the flat and stuff. And his response to me was, via text message, was, "Oh, don't let anybody define you. You're amazing. Go out and do whatever you want." And I straightforwardly said, "Well, I'm not letting anybody define me. I know who I am clearly, but I actually want to live in this world and I want to exist now. I want to survive, and I have to genuinely worry that every time I go outside, something could happen to me. I might not make it home alive one day."
Yeah.
And then that night, the news about Breanna Jai came out.
Yeah.
And it just cemented so much for me. And then I wrote a poem about safety, and that's what just kicked off the whole thing. That's what kicked off everything for me.
Wow. It's, yeah, I think a lot of times people don't understand unless they've experienced it, the fear of, look at that. I've definitely gone through the whole I'm scared of leaving my flat. I still get times where I'm scared of leaving the flat. Mine's not so much. I haven't, as a rule, experienced, you know, like attacks because of what I look like. So I'm extremely lucky in some, mostly people
I
just
mean, I would hope not, because you're a fucking phenomenal king, and I don't want to
well.
see anybody say anything to you, so.
Ah, thank you. I want to fight everybody that attacks you, just so you know.
Thank you. That's really sweet. Look, I love the fact that it is always other trends people that will come to like the site of other trends. Okay,
100%, like
that is
the
back
queer
to be like, I should kick
community,
your ass.
the queer community have each other's backs, and I fucking
Yeah,
love that.
I love it.
But yeah, no, it's a real thing, like being genuinely afraid of stepping outside. Mine is from PTSD, which is a bundle of laughs. And there was a time when my abusive ex was stalking me, and so I couldn't, like, I had to be really careful about where I went and how I went, and it was
Yeah.
terrifying. And sometimes that comes back, which is really good. But I think unless someone has experienced that, they're just kind of like, oh my God, don't let someone stop you from living your life and going out and doing it. And it's like, it's not about that. It's about weighing up actual risks
Yeah.
and
And then
being sensible.
it's also about thinking to yourself, if I want to go out and I be safe, then I don't what I'm not going to wear what I want to wear. I'm not going to present how I would normally present, how I
Yeah.
want to, like that. We shouldn't have to go through that thing, because I'm not, I went through all the decades of just going out wearing a hoodie and jeans. I'm not a hoodie and jeans girl. I need big, grandiose kind of things to make me feel good. It just makes,
Yeah.
I had no sense of fashion for years, and now I've found a sense of fashion. I'm not losing that for anybody.
Heck no. I'm so glad to hear it. And do you know what? The world deserves you as you, because you're fabulous. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I can say exactly
Fuck
the same.
everyone.
I can say that same about you. Yeah, fuck everyone. See, now you're on the fuck everyone board.
I'm on the fuck everyone motto. I love this.
I
One thing I really want to quickly touch on, you mentioned Brianna Jai. I feel like we've seen, because we had, I think I saw a post where someone was like, Big Brother, however many years ago, like 10 or maybe
Yes,
longer years ago.
that Nadia
Yeah,
win. That's
Nadia
another one.
won. A
Yeah.
trans woman had the support of the public, and it's not that trans people have changed, it's that the hatred towards them has just been ramped up, and the media has got into this
The media has spiraled.
frenzy.
The media has spiraled. And then also, I feel like at that point, I mean, if you look back in history, and I was talking about this in an article recently, Hayley on Coronation Street was one of the most
Oh
popular
my God.
characters of
I
my
fucking
childhood.
loved Hayley.
I loved Hayley. She was the first experience of a trans person that I had on TV.
Yeah, same, I think.
But then I wondered to myself, had things been different in 1997, and obviously, like the actress that played her was incredible. Had she been played by a trans woman, would the reception have been so positive?
Oh, that's a good point.
You know, I do wonder that sometimes.
And also, was she so beloved? Because she was quite a meek character. She was
Yeah.
just really sweet. But if she'd have had any kind of edge to her or done anything, quote unquote, like morally wrong or ambiguous.
They were very openly transphobic to her in the show. They would have characters call her a man and call her slurs and
Yeah.
do it. Obviously, as a storyline, it's a show, they're gonna do that. But they would do that, and she wouldn't react necessarily. She wouldn't respond, and it makes you wonder: is it because, like you said, because she was just seen as this meek little character for the longest time, that they felt like they could warm themselves to them? But the second that we're out here and saying, no, actually, this is us, and we're openly bold and proud and loud about who we are, suddenly we're this aggressive agenda that's coming for them and their existence. It's like, no, we're not trying to trans you. We're just trying to survive, please. Thank you.
Oh my God, the trans agenda to make everybody trans. Yes,
Yeah,
that's, yeah.
I got told off yesterday apparently for spouting propaganda, and I was like, well, I don't know what you're talking about. What's the propaganda? It's my existence. Like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, go
But
fuck
I've seen
yourself.
that a
There
lot.
we go. Right. So the final thing we're going to talk about is the pure joy of owning your sexuality in sex work. Chris J, tell me.
Yeah, I just think I'm very outwardly a sex positive person, and I've been doing sex work digitally for, oh my God, 3 years and 3 years now. I started combining stuff in mid 2020, and for anybody that doesn't understand what I do, I basically compile like a Google Drive of content that I produce myself. and I sell access to it because when I was kind of investigating stuff on OnlyFans in 2020, I literally looked at OnlyFans and I was like, well, you can't do this, you can't do that. The only people that are thriving are like cisgender, white, straight men, like I'm with a six pack and stuff, and I don't have any of those things, and I'm not interested in having any of those things. So I was just like, I'm going to go down my own route and I'm going to do it organically. And through doing that, I've also helped other people start doing it organically as well. I've spoken to a lot of people about kind of taking control of their content. And as we've seen in the years, as o OnlyFans and Just for Fans has grown, their controls and access on what you're allowed to do has become so, oh, just vanilla, just so vanilla. Like you literally can't even do like any kind of water sports or anything. I hate calling it water sports, like the paddling. You can't even do any piss content or anything. Like, it's just absurd. You can't film anywhere in public, like even if it was so safe without anybody around. Like, it's just so restrictive. They can take access to your money and take the 20%. Like, no, I'm so happy just doing my own individual grassroots porn. Like, it makes me happy and it helps me stand out from other people because nobody, you can't go to any fan site and buy my stuff. You have to come directly to me to do it.
And that's, the like surely the whole point is that it is empowering and it's something that is within your creative control.
Yeah.
You can do independently.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, I'm not going to say there's a lot of shame around digital sex work now, but there still is in some ways, unless you're a specific kind of person. But there is so much shame in kink work, and I'll never understand that because kinks are so unique to different people, and they're also consensual. Like, as long as you're consenting to something, like, somebody else, like me doing something in my content doesn't mean somebody else has to do it. It just means I'm consenting to do it.
You're consenting to do it. Somebody is going to pay you to see it and they will get something out of it and it will be wonderful. And it
Yeah,
just, there's more joy in the
and that's the thing. Sex work is customer service. I don't think people realize it's just making people happy. It's making people happy. I mean, it's the biggest thing. If I can make somebody happy with my content, then my job is done.
Well, this is a
I've never had any complaints, so.
this is a very sex positive podcast and decriminalize sex work and no
Literally.
shame for
Why
kink.
should, why are we still hide, why are we still like thrown in the shadows of the world like it's the 1800s and or whatever, and Jack the Ripper's still going around? Like, this sex work has always existed in some way or form. I was doing sex work before I even knew what sex work was.
I don't even think I've got anything much to say on this because I'm just like, sex work is work and it's art, as you rightly point out, and just let people do what they want to do.
Yeah, exactly. But can I say, I really appreciate and love the fact that you're such a sex positive person. You're a kink positive person. I listen to the podcast and the things that you have to say in intelligence and the insight you have into everything is incredible. I
Oh,
love that.
thank you.
I wish there were more people like you.
I will always happily talk about sex and kink and it's, I mean, there's just so many benefits to like literally everybody from for understanding more about those things and themselves. So
I mean, it's beautiful and it's unique to every single one of us. We should be celebrating that, and it's one of the reasons that my social media is includes the sex work. I don't have it on a separate account. I don't have it on anything. It's totally cool and awesome if anybody else does that and has like an alternate account for that work. But I wanted to destigmatize it. I wanted to say this is also a very valid part of me. If somebody doesn't want to consent to see it, that's great and awesome. Nobody has to follow me. I never thought have any issue with anybody not following me. But see me as a person, and the fact that this is a very something I'm not ashamed of and something I choose not to hide because we shouldn't have to hide it.
Absolutely agree. And it's such an honor to have you on the podcast talking about all of this so openly. And hopefully it's going to,
Literally.
help other people on their way as well.
I hope so. I'm working on some more like sex positivity kind of poetry right now as well, because I haven't, a lot of my stuff is just coming from like a place of struggle or queer joy, and I need to kind of also fit that into it somewhere as well. So I'm going to see what comes along.
I can't wait to see it. I cannot wait to see it. So if you've listened to the podcast before, you know that I ask all my guests the same question. If
Yes.
you were a mythical creature, what would you be and why?
It's such a, it's probably a really boring answer.
I love them all.
I would be a siren.
Oh, yes, you would. Yes,
Yeah.
you would. Oh my God, yes, you would. Wearing like
Isn't that
a big
perfect of
fur
me?
coat as well.
Isn't it perfect for me? Because I grew up in love with The Little Mermaid. It was my favorite thing. I wanted to be Ariel. I didn't even understand it.
Oh.
But also, I love the fact that sirens are so beautiful, but
Mm.
so lure, can lure people into harm. I think that's incredible. And I think it just, it says a lot about the deception of the world that we just take things on face value and don't think about what's behind it. So I, it just has a bit, a lot of messages to me, and I would be a beautiful, beautiful brown siren just killing transphobic bitches in some way. Boris Johnson, get in the sea.
Oh my God, I love that answer so much.
Thank you. I love the fact that it just clicked with you instantly when I said,
Like it really did. Like I could imagine you on a rock in like this big fur coat and just like long flowing hair, and you're just like, ooh, yeah. And then people kind of like swim out to you and then they drown. Or they, reach paradise, whichever.
Yeah, well, they reach exactly, it's got to make it worth
That is amazing. Oh my God, thank you so much. So have you got anything to share with us? I think you might have a poem.
I do have something if you're willing to hear it.
Oh my God, I'm so here for this. I'm so here for this.
Okay, I know you've seen a little something while I'm working on already, but so I have this piece that I'm incredibly proud of. This is like brand new to me. I only just kind of got it down a few days ago, but this is called Transplant, and it's basically about my existence in this world and how I've never fit in. But how, yeah, this is Transplant. If I could have peeled the skin from my body and erased their first glance, I would have. Just to be peaceful in my existence. I wanted to blend into the monotony, fall into anonymity, rather than stand loud like a pink flamingo, easily seen boldly in the distance. Wanting to disappear into the ever as they'd stare and point and smirk and holler and follow it up with bad monkey impersonations. And as people would say, ignore it. It's easier said than done when you're not the one that it's happening to. I wouldn't say that to you. I felt like a transplant from the day I was born, in a family who didn't understand what loving was, in a country that didn't want us to exist here. But I was here. Pick it up, pull it down. Cut it up in a straight line now. Improve your cursive, write directly. We don't use that word here, so sit correctly. No, not like that. Maybe where you're from, but you're not there now, so move it along. Follow me, forget intuition. Impersonate this, paper dolls in repetition. You have a culture that must be nice. Be grateful you're here now, pay the price. Smile along as you take the hit. Your type don't feel pain, so get a grip. I've seen all about you lot taking our jobs. So the slobs can remain the slobs. I'd bleach that skin if you want to belong, because my dad said you should go back where you're from. I felt like a transplant from the day I was born, a brown stain in a bleached lane, expected to show remorse, surrounded by people that didn't want me to exist here. But I was here. Now, as I reflect, and my bones grow tired, I feel pride in the strength I acquired. And after fading, I now stand bold. I raise my colour and break their mould. I wasn't meant to belong. I was meant to stand out. I was meant for better than this world has dished out. And though I often walk alone, I walk with an army of my ancestry. You see, you can no longer break me. I felt like a transplant from the day I was born. Broken, battered, family scattered, I chose to regrow, be reborn in a world that still doesn't want me to exist here. But I'm still here.
Wow, that's so powerful.
Thank you. I haven't read that to anyone before, so.
Oh, we are delighted to be the first place that puts it out on the air. That is, yeah, there's so much in there. And again, I think that's something that so many people will be able to relate to. God,
Thank you.
I just love that I've had this opportunity to have you on here so that other people can like meet you and hear all your words of wisdom.
I think it's new for me to tell people that I'm a poet and I'm a writer. Like, it's new for me to do that and ex like make that my thing. But this is what I've done for a long time. I've just done it in, I guess, in the shadows.
Like everything else. And it's amazing that now you're, taking off the metaphorical hoodie and jeans and putting on the fabulous flamingo coats.
Damn right. Thank you so much for letting me read that. I'm incredibly proud of that piece, and it just means a lot to me.
It's a really powerful piece. I genuinely mean that. And I can't wait to hear what you do next and how the book comes along and more poetry comes from you. So yeah, it's been an honor to have you on.
Thank you so much. It's been an honor to be on here. Like, I really appreciate it so much.
Any final words of wisdom or any upcoming shows that aren't in March?
So I am doing there's a podcast called Queer I Am that is going to be doing live shows through May in Brighton. I am going to be part of that on May the 9th, talking about coming out. We're going to be doing a live recording at Arco Baleno in Brighton. So there should be tickets online. All the money goes to charity. And there are some incredible people included in this season, including Jill Nalder, who, if anybody's seen It's a Sin, she's the person behind It's as like she is the girl from the Pink Palace. So
Oh my God.
yeah, it's an incredible lineup, and I'm really honored to be a part of it. So if you're around in Brighton in May, like, have a look, see if you can come down, everybody. And I think that's it for now. Until then, I'm just scrolling away on my book, so I'm going to be kind of a hermit.
Be a hermit, be a book writing hermit. It's the best kind. Chris J. Angel, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an honor, George Parker. I love you. I adore
Ah,
you,
I
seriously.
adore you too. Take care, darling.
Thank you. Take care, babe.